So this weekend, we're also kicking off a brand new series called Light in the Darkness. And as we get started with the series, let me hear some of those answers to that connection question. Favorite sitcom, what do you got?
Full House.
Oh, Full House. So you can show your age by the sitcom that you like here. All right, what else you got? Different Strokes? You said Different Strokes. No, now you're not even going to admit it. All right, what else? What else? Come on, come on.
MASH.
Oh, that's going way back. Somebody earlier was like, The Office. I'm like, the what? I haven't even heard of that. So, see, here's the thing. We like sitcoms. And why wouldn't you? It's feel-good TV. At the beginning of a sitcom, everybody's happy, right? Now, then they introduce a little bit of tension, all right? Some kind of problem, but that's okay, because it holds our attention, and we all know how it's going to end. We all know that in 30 minutes or less, including commercial breaks, they're going to find a solution, and everybody's going to be happy again. The formula is simple. It's happy, tension, solution, happy. Now, did you know there's such a thing as sitcom sermons? There are. And don't get me wrong, I'm not saying it's a bad thing. It's actually a very effective form of communication. And with a sitcom sermon, you have a formula as well. You have an introduction where you do something fun or engaging or dramatic, and it grabs people's attention and it orients them to the topic that you're going to talk about. And then you create some tension where you help folks begin to see, okay, this is where maybe we're not living as much as we should or would or would want to into this particular area of our lives. And then you go to God's word for some kind of solution to help us with where we're falling short. And then you give people some good practical tools that help them have hope that they could move from here to there. And then you send them out for lunch after church. It's a sitcom sermon. I have preached plenty, and I'm going to preach plenty more before I'm ever done. All right? You got a fan. Here's the thing, though. Today's going to be different. In fact, look at a person next to you and tell them, uh-oh. See, today's sermon is not going to be a sitcom sermon. Again, I think it's a great way to communicate, but today's sermon won't be a sitcom sermon. And it won't be for a number of reasons. It won't be because life doesn't always work like a sitcom, does it? Sometimes in life, you've got a problem and it doesn't get resolved in 30 minutes, including commercial breaks. It doesn't get resolved in 30 weeks or 30 months or sometimes 30 years. Sometimes life is hard. Real life doesn't always work like a sitcom. And this won't be a sitcom sermon today because of where we're going to go today in the Bible. See, we're basing this series off of the Old Testament book of Habakkuk. Look at somebody else and tell them Habakkuk. You know you're saying it right if it feels like you're coughing up a furball. Habakkuk, right? See, today's sermon, every sermon in this series is going to be based off of the book of Habakkuk and the prophecy that Habakkuk the prophet received. In fact, there's three chapters in the book of Habakkuk. There are going to be 3 weeks in this series. It's going to be kind of a mini-series. Today we're in week one. Anybody want a gander, you know, like what chapter we're going to be in? One is correct. I knew I could count on you, Ron, right? So if you said one and you got it right, you get a free cookie in Fellowship Hall after church. You just make your way in there, you get your cookie, and they'll try and get you to sign up for about 2 million different things, right? So, it's based off of Habakkuk chapter 1. That's where we're going to be today. And here's a problem with Habakkuk chapter 1. It doesn't read like a sitcom. It just doesn't. And so today's sermon isn't going to be a sitcom sermon. But that's okay, because what Habakkuk is going to talk about here, it's something we need to hear, regardless of where we're at in life, because that changes. See, sometimes in life, life is good. It feels like you're on the mountain, right? Just like you come to church, and the sermon is good. It ends on time. It feels like they wrote it just for you. You get in your car, and you forgot your playlist. It's no big deal. You turn on the radio, and bam, it's your favorite song right away. You go shopping, you pull in, you get a parking spot right by the door like it was reserved for you. When things get wonky in your world, you pray. And God hears your prayers, and he answers them, gives you more than you ask for. Sometimes life is lived up on the mountain. But if you've been around for any length of time, you know you don't stay up on the mountain. Not all of life gets lived up here. Sometimes life takes you off of a mountain and into a dark valley. And life's hard there. You go to church and the sermon's, it's not bad, but maybe it wasn't for you. Somebody else. You get in the car and there's nothing good. I mean, you didn't bring your playlist. Nothing good on the radio. It's all Beyonce, every station. Blah, right? I deeply offended a Beyonce fan during first service, you know. Whatever. So, you go shopping and you got to park way out in the boondocks. You can't get anywhere near the door. Things get wonky and you pray and it feels like it's just bouncing right back off of the ceiling. God doesn't answer your prayer. In fact, you get the opposite of what you asked for. Sometimes life is lived in the valley. The thing about Habakkuk is he gets that. He gets what life is like in the valley, and he speaks to that. He is saying something that every one of us here needs to hear. See, if you're up on the mountain, Habakkuk's saying something you need to hear. And if you're on the mountain, enjoy that. Thank God for that. Live while you're there. But again, life just it works in such a way, nobody gets to stay there all the time. So write down what he's saying, listen to him, so when you find yourself in a valley, you've got what you need. What we're going to talk about in this series, this might not even be for you. This might not even be about you. But God might have somebody in your life. He put you there on purpose. Somebody who's struggling, and he gave you influence with that individual. And your job is to listen to what Habakkuk is saying and to write that down and to help that person. And some of you right here and now, I know you're in the valley because you've told me about it. You're struggling. You're in a dark place. And you need to hear what Habakkuk is saying, because as he's speaking to you, he's holding out a light in the darkness to you. Now, who is this Habakkuk character anyway? We already said that he's a prophet, right? It means he's a bit of a preacher. And scholars, they argue about when exactly did he preach. They pretty much agree it's sometime during the 7th century B.C., and they all agree he preached to the people of Judah at a time where the people of Judah were not doing so well spiritually. Now, as a preacher, as a prophet, Habakkuk, his job as a prophet is to preach, but he does it differently. See, typical Old Testament prophet, what they would do is they would speak to the people on behalf of God. You read through the Old Testament prophets, the formula is pretty much the same. It's uniform. Prophet will show up, I got a word from the Lord, this is where you're messing up, this is what God's going to do if you don't fly straight, and here's how you can avoid that and still receive mercy and grace. They speak to the people on behalf of God. Habakkuk is different. Instead, he speaks to God on behalf of the people. He speaks to God on behalf of the people. Here's what he says right at the beginning of his book. I'm going to read it to you and see if you can pick up on some of his mood. How long, Lord? How long must I call to you for help, but you don't listen? Or cry out to you, violence, but you don't save? Why do you make me look at injustice? Why do you tolerate wrongdoing? Destruction and violence are before me. There is strife and conflict abounds. Therefore, the law is paralyzed and justice never prevails. The wicked hem in the righteous so that justice is perverted. Now, is it just me or does he seem a little bit tense here? You know why he seems tense here? Because he is. He is all kinds of wound up. And if you're thinking, why has he got his knickers all in a fankle? Let me explain, right? You can actually read. There's extensive passages in the Old Testament that describe why Habakkuk is so upset. I haven't got time to unpack them all, but I'll summarize them. All right? The way it was supposed to work is somebody should have been able to walk into the land of Judah and kind of look around them and go, oh, this is what it looks like when people live for God. That's why Israel was located where it is. It's why it was God's design. Instead, in Habakkuk's day, you would look around, and politically, religiously, socially, the landscape is dominated by sin and injustice and selfishness and perversion. Like in Habakkuk's time, you had wealthy and politically powerful people who would use those advantages to take advantage of others. They would oppress people. The rich got wealthy off of the backs of the poor. They would take advantage of people. And if somebody had the gall to stand up and say, hey, this isn't right, or to try and fight against that, they just have them killed. In Habakkuk's time, you had religious leaders who would say things like, yo, I've got a word from the Lord. They would claim to have direct communication from God, all the while knowing they're just making that stuff up. They're making it up in an effort to maintain their own political power and popularity and authority in people's lives. Or in Habakkuk's time, it went from the king on the throne to the regular guy on the streets. Everybody's kind of turned their back on God and his ways. They're worshiping foreign gods. They've set up idols to foreign gods right in God's temple. They went so far as they began to engage in human sacrifice. Parents would literally sacrifice their infant children to these foreign gods. At one point, it got so bad that they'd virtually lost all the Bibles in the country. It'd been decades since hardly anybody had seen one. And they're cleaning out the temple one day, and they find this book, and they're like, what in the world is this? And they open the thing up, and they're like, this is a Bible. We haven't seen one of these in forever. And they start reading it, and they are overwhelmed and distraught at how far their lives have come from what they're reading. Habakkuk, as he looks around, he's seeing things like these and more, and it seems to him like God isn't doing anything about it, and Habakkuk is not okay with it. As he says here, why do you not listen? Why do you make me look? Why do you tolerate? He's essentially saying, God, are you blind up there? Can't you see what's happening here? God, are you even listening? Have you gone deaf? God, why aren't you doing something? I know you can. Why aren't you doing anything? See, Habakkuk's taking time to remind God, you're supposed to be holy, you're supposed to be just, you're supposed to be powerful, and it seems like you're just sitting on your hands, man. Now, as Habakkuk is asking these questions, in the face of just gross injustice and immorality, he's expressing the very kind of things that people have been expressing. He's asking the very kind of questions that people have been asking for a long, long time. See, when you find yourself in a dark valley, there's something inside of us that just naturally goes where Habakkuk went. For example, last year in July, my brother-in-law, Dave, was working as the maintenance director at Bear Lake Bible Camp. And they were having an issue with one of their cabins, and so the maintenance protocol was to crank the heat way up in that cabin. And so it's a Sunday, he's got the heat crank way up, and he's getting ready to go to church, and he thinks, before I head to church, I'm going to poke my head, just make sure everything's going okay in the cabin. When he looks in, the cabin just reeks of propane. And so he's a maintenance director. He figures out, okay, we've got a gas leak in this cabin. We need to do something about this. And so he goes in, and he's opening up doors, and he's opening up windows. He's going to try and air the place out before he addresses the leak. And to this day, we're not exactly sure how it happened, but something sparked in the cabin. Now, when you've got a room full of propane and you light off a spark in that room, bad things happen. It was like just a bomb going off. You could hear it all across campgrounds. Literally shook the place. For my brother-in-law, Dave, it was like being in a bomb when somebody set it off. Now that day, his best friend, a guy named Erickson, he was on campgrounds, and he heard the explosion, and he was the first one at the scene. as chance would have it, by trade, Erickson's a firefighter. And just what he found was horrible. That the cabin is just in shambles. It's actively burning. And his best friend is on the ground, rolling around, trying to extinguish himself, screaming out for help. It blows my mind. A cabin goes up with Dave inside of it, and somehow he remains conscious. Somehow he drags his body out of the burning wreckage, and he's got enough sense to try and begin to put himself out. And so Erickson gets him put out, but it's bad, really bad. 90% of his body burned, large portions to 100% thickness. And again, I don't know how this works, but somehow Dave is still conscious. He's still alert. He's still aware. And he's left to plead with his best friend, "Don't let my wife and kids see me like this. This is too gruesome. They shouldn't have to look at this." Now, all this happened on a Sunday. At the time, I was still on staff at another church, and God was not preaching that weekend. And while the sermon's going on, I'm in my office, I'm meeting with somebody else, and my wife comes into my office, and I could tell by the look on her face, this is not good news. She's just a wreck. And she explains to me what happened, and that she needs to drive out to Kalamazoo because they're going to airlift Dave to Kalamazoo, and she needs to be with her sister Sarah. And so she goes, and I'm left to finish out church for the day. And afterwards, I can remember sitting in my car with questions. Questions like Habakkuk's. See, Dave wasn't just my brother-in-law. Before he was ever my brother-in-law, he was my friend. And my wife, Laura, and I, we liked Dave so much, we intentionally tried to set him up with her sister, Sarah, so we could keep him in the family. And it worked, right? We thought we got him for life. He had 5 kids. The youngest was just months old. He's serving at a Bible camp as a maintenance director. He'd sacrificed big time in order to be in that role. He was doing a great job in it. I'm sitting there in the parking lot. I just want to know why. Why, God? Why'd you let there be a leak? Why'd you let Dave find it? Why didn't you keep him out of that room? What were you thinking, letting a spark happen? Why'd you let him get burned like that? God, of all the people who you would let something like this happen to, why in the world would you let that happen to Dave? You ever been there? To some degree, you're in a dark valley. You long since come off the mountaintop. And you want to know why. Are you seeing any of this? Are you hearing any of this, God? Are you even doing anything up there? See, that's where Habakkuk was at. And so he asks his questions, and God answers. I'm going to go out on a limb and say Habakkuk wished he didn't ask the questions once he got the answer. Ever done that? I was 19 years old, and I asked this lady, and you know what's coming. I said, "So, hey, when you do?" Ooh. Uh-huh. And don't sit there like you've never done this, because I know after first service, I just got one story after another about, oh, yeah, I remember when I did that, right? I was a 19-year-old kid. I was stupid. I didn't know any better. She was alone at the camp. I'm trying to help her feel friendly. So I'm like, "When do you do?" And she wasn't pregnant. And she let me know she wasn't pregnant. And when she got done letting me know she wasn't pregnant, I was scarred for life, right? I haven't asked that question since. I'll never ask it again. You can be 9 months pregnant, ready to explode. You can be in active labor. I'm assuming it's a tumor until you tell me otherwise. Right? You don't ask that question. Habakkuk asked his question, and I think when he got the answer, he maybe wished he hadn't asked. He asks, and God answers, and God says to him, look at the nations and watch, and be utterly amazed. I'm going to do something in your days that you would not believe even if you were told. Look, I'm raising up the Babylonians, that ruthless and impetuous people who sweep across the whole earth and seize dwellings not their own. God, you're not doing anything. Oh, yes, I am. I'm going to send the Babylonians. Trouble with that is the Babylonians are worse than the people of Judah. Like, go home, you read Habakkuk chapter 1. God describes in length, in poetic kind of ways, what the Babylonians are like. Tells Habakkuk, basically, I'm going to send this godless, ruthless, vicious, violent people who take whatever they want with unstoppable force. I'm going to send them to you. I'm going to send the worst people in the known world to come and judge you all. He asks a question, and he gets an answer he wishes he never got. Again, you ever been there? Like, you lose your job, and you ask God to help you. For a long time, you don't get a job. When you finally do get a job, it's beneath your education, it's beneath your skill level. But you take it because you got to have something, but you feel like a loser working it. Or you're alone, and you don't want to be alone. You don't want to be single. You want to be married. So you pray to God to send you a soulmate. And you start dating this person. You think they're the one, the one, the one, the one. And you get married. But then you get on each other's nerves. And then you fight. Then all seems like you ever do is fight. And you pray and you ask God to help you, and you even go talk to a pastor, and you see a counselor. It doesn't get better, it just gets worse, and now you don't even know if you like this person you live with. Or you go to the doctor, and he tells you you got cancer, and you say, you know what, I'm going to fight this thing. And you pray, and you have faith, and you do chemo, and you do radiation, and you beat cancer. Thank God. A couple years later, the doctor tells you the cancer's back. And you just don't get it. Ever been in a dark place and you ask God about what's going on, and instead of getting better, it gets worse? See, that's where Habakkuk is at. Now, what do you do? What do you do when that's when life sends your way? What do you do when that's what God lets happen? I mean, I suppose we can just stick our head in the sand and pretend like everything's good. It's a mess, but we're just going to pretend like everything's just fine. Or suppose we get mad and just say, you know what, life with God ain't helping. I'm just going to leave him behind altogether and walk away from God. Habakkuk, he shows us something better. Points us to a better way. In fact, in each chapter of his book, Habakkuk seeks to give us a tool designed to help us find light in a dark place. And in chapter 1, Habakkuk literally lives that tool out. He shows us what it is. In chapter 1, Habakkuk tells us, hey, when you want to believe that God is still good, even though life is bad, what you need to do is wrestle. You need to wrestle. And as Habakkuk wrestles, there's two distinct things that he does. First one is simply this. As Habakkuk wrestles, he expresses. He expresses his questions, he expresses his doubts. He expresses his questions to God about what in the world is going on. He expresses his doubts about how God is handling it. And as Habakkuk expresses, you read through chapter 1, he is not shy in the way he expresses. No, Habakkuk is loud, he is direct, he is real, he is raw. He lets God have it. You ever been in a spot where you're like, you know what? If I was God, I'd do this differently than God's doing it. People are afraid to raise your hands, aren't you? Like, get me struck down in church, right? The real people here, though. You ever been in a spot where you do it differently than how God did it? And you're sitting there and you're going, okay, God, are you paying attention up there? What are you doing? What are you thinking, God? Do you even care? Listen to me. If you've ever felt like that, that's okay. It's okay. In fact, you ready? It's biblical. No, it's biblical. Read through the book of Psalms. About a third of the Psalms are expressions of questions and doubts to God about what he's doing or not doing. Holy Spirit inspired, included in your Bible, raw expressions of questions and doubts directed towards God. You read through the book of Jeremiah or Job or Lamentations, large portions of those books are expressions of questions and doubts to God. Gang, Jesus did this. He is hanging on a cross dying, and he cries out to God the Father, "Why? Why have you forsaken me?" If you have questions, if you have doubts, those are legal. Those are okay. You can express them. Because you see, at the end of the day, God would much rather that you yell and scream at him in a hot rage than walk away from your relationship with him in an icy silence. God would rather have you just open up the floodgates and let him have it than walk away from your relationship with him altogether. If you are struggling, if you're just trying to figure out what in the world is going on, if you have questions, you have doubts, express them to God. He's not mad at you for having them. He's not intimidated by them. He's not unaware that they're there. It's not like it's a secret. You're going to say something, God's going to be like, "Oh, I can't believe she thinks that." He already knows. And biblically speaking, people who do this, who express their questions and their doubts, more often than not, it doesn't drive them away from God. It draws them closer to him. See, people are afraid, you know, like, if I express these doubts, my faith is going to crack. No, God knows. Your questions and your doubts, they're not incompatible with a sincere faith. You can have both. And so Habakkuk, he expresses. He lets God know. He gets completely honest with God. But he doesn't stop there. See, if you're going to wrestle and you're going to do wrestling right, you're going to do wrestle in a healthy kind of way, you're not only going to express, but you're also going to embrace. You got to do both. And Habakkuk, he embraces. And as he embraces, what he does is he declares the things he knows to be true about God, and then he holds on to those things for dear life. See, when we're in a dark place, we've got to figure out who or what gets to determine who God is and what he's like. Because there's going to be a competition. On one hand, our emotions and our circumstances, they're going to vie. They're going to try and determine who God is and what he is like for us. They're going to scream all kinds of things at us. And Habakkuk, he does not let his ever-changing emotions and circumstances do that. Though they rage around him, though they rage within him, he says, no, the scriptures, the unchanging scriptures get to declare who God is. And so he calls those things out. In chapter 1, he says things like, God, you are from everlasting. You've always existed. You always will. You know everything that's happened. You know everything that's coming. Where he says, God, you are holy. You are pure. You are the only one in this broken world free from sin and injustice. God, you are the rock. You are the only one who is stable, the only one who is unshakable. See, as his emotions and his circumstances are trying to get him to believe certain things about God, Habakkuk says, no, this is what the scriptures tell me. I'm going to declare this. I'm going to hold on to this for dear life. So when his circumstances are going, hey, it feels like God doesn't know what he's doing here. No. You're from everlasting. You know everything that's happened. You know everything that's coming. Or it feels like Feels like God's going to let you down. Feels like God isn't going to do right by you here. No, no, no. He is holy. He is pure. If anyone is going to do right, it's him. Feels like he's pretty unreliable here. No, no, no. He is the rock. The only thing I can stand on. Habakkuk, he embraces. He declares who the scriptures tell him God is, and then he holds on to that for dear life so that he knows, I can trust God even when I don't feel him. I can believe in God even when it doesn't make sense. I can follow him even when I'm not sure where he's leading me. He wrestles. He expresses and he embraces. Now let me tell you how I wish this sermon was going to end. Wish I could tell you Dave had his accident. And we all knew, apart from God showing up in a miraculous way, we were going to be burying Dave. But God showed up. And Dave recovered. And now God is using Dave and his life and his story to draw people to himself. That's not how the story ended. Instead, they airlifted Dave to U of M Hospital. And he spent the better part of 7 months in the U of M Trauma Burn Center. They had to intubate him because he couldn't breathe on his own initially. If they didn't, he was going to die right away. And the intubation tube, it irritated things in his airways, and he formed blood clots. And eventually he threw a clot, and he coded, and so that the medical staff and the crash cart, they all descend upon Dave, and for the better part of 30 minutes, they try and bring Dave back, and they finally do. But that time, those 30 minutes, it created extensive organ damage. Organ damage that infection took full advantage of. It was right before Christmas. Merry Christmas. Infection took Dave's life. It's not how I wanted the story to end. But it's how it ended. At least that part of it. Because it's not a sitcom story. It's real life. Real life that took people off of the mountaintop and led them into a dark valley. But here's the thing. True intimacy with God, real faith, belief, hope, you just can't cultivate that up on the mountaintop the way you can in the valley. Just can't. And so people got led off of the mountain into the valley, and they're trying to cultivate those things there. And that's the end of Habakkuk chapter 1. It's the end of this sermon. Not a sitcom chapter. Not a sitcom sermon. But hopefully one where Habakkuk gives you the first of three tools. Tools meant to help you find light in a dark place. And I hope you'll hang in there with Habakkuk. I hope you'll hang in there with me. I can't promise every sermon is going to be a sitcom sermon. But I can promise if you'll hang in here with Habakkuk, he's going to show you how to find light in a dark place.